Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Because of Donald Trump's victory, we have decided to continue our weekly series on Project 2025. Over the past 4 months, we have done weekly shows about how the Heritage Foundation-led authoritarian plan will affect all aspects of U.S. life. Donald Trump spent months lying to the public and the media about his connections to Project 2025. He is now making his loyalties clear. He has nominated several people with ties to the plan to important posts in his next administration. Tom Homan, Trump's new border czar, is a visiting fellow at the Heritage Foundation. Stephen Miller, who's been tapped to serve as Trump's deputy chief of staff, heads up America First Legal, which originally appeared on the list of advisory board members to Project 2025. Miller had America First Legal removed from the list when the project became politically unpopular on the campaign trail. Brendan Carr has been tapped to lead the Federal Communications Commission. He authored the chapter in Project 2025 about the FCC. ABC reports that Christian nationalist Russell Voigt, a key architect of Project 2025, is being considered for a top position. Last month, ProPublica unearthed videos of Voigt giving private speeches in which he made comments that a, quote, Trump administration will seek to make civil servants miserable in their jobs. He also said the administration will use armed forces to quell any domestic riots. So what should we expect and how are organizations responding? Skye Perryman is president and CEO of Democracy Forward, a national legal organization that works to advance democracy and social progress through litigation, policy, and public education. Skye was on our show to talk about the People's Guide to Project 2025. After reading the 900-plus page Project 2025, Democracy Forward found that it would limit access to food assistance, roll back civil rights protections, eliminate the Head Start Early Education Program, and so much more. You can find that guide at democracyforward.org. Democracy Forward is spearheading an initiative called Democracy 2025 to ensure swift legal challenges and responses to harmful and anti-democratic actions expected in the first days of the Trump-Vance administration. Democracy 2025 includes more than 280 legal, expert, and advocacy groups and more than 800 individuals representing millions of people and communities across the country. And they've got a new website, democracy2025.org. Hi, Skye. Thank you so much for joining us again.
Well, it's good to be back. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's great to have you back. We're also joined by Lisa Graves, founder and executive director of True North Research, an investigative watchdog group that works with journalists and researchers to expose how dark money shapes agendas in public institutions like churches and schools. We had Lisa on to talk about the more than 100 conservative organizations behind Project 2025. You can learn more about True North Research at truenorthresearch.org. Hi, Lisa, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Rose. A joy to be on with you and also with Skye in these dark days.
Well, thank you both, and huge thanks to you for all the work that you've done to really raise awareness about what is at stake here. Skye, I want to start with you. We had you on twice. And again, thank you to your group, because the People's Guide to Project 2025 really exposed so much that wasn't getting attention in the media. Like, I keep thinking about eliminating Head Start and the cruelty behind that. Exposing foster children to increased risks of discrimination. What are your thoughts on what happened on election night, Skye? Because when you look at the polling, the overwhelming majority of the people in this country oppose what we did here in the media around Project 2025. And yet Donald Trump won the popular vote by 2.5 million votes. So what reactions would you like to share?
You know, I'm not in the hot take business yet, because I think we've got to learn more as data comes out and as people talk and there will be focus groups. But I do think what we know without any hot take, what the sort of evidence shows us, what we saw throughout the campaign trail and throughout the election was that Project 2025 and the extremism that the policies there reflect was deeply unpopular with conservatives. It was deeply unpopular with independents, and it was deeply unpopular with more liberal people across the board. And of course, that's why the president-elect had to run away from it on the campaign trail and lead people to believe that, you know, deceptively that he had no ties to the personnel or to the policies in the Project 2025 document. But the other thing we saw on election night is we saw in geographically diverse regions across the country, in deep red Missouri, in places across the country, we saw what the American people want in terms of issues. You saw people voting for abortion access. Abortion access received more votes in the state of Florida than Donald Trump did, and more votes than Ron DeSantis did the last time. You saw people voting for fair wages. They voted for public education. They voted for climate initiatives, including in states like Louisiana. And so I think that what we learned about Project 2025 on the campaign trail, which is as deeply unpopular that there is no mandate for this extremism, we saw, of course, on the issues and the ballot initiatives on election night. And that is why it's going to be so incredibly important that the American people hold their elected leaders, including the president-elect, to account in these next months and years ahead, because this is clearly something that people across the country, different regions, different ideologies, rejected. And that's, of course, what we, and I know what Lisa and so many wonderful people and groups are going to really try to help enable the American people to do.
Lisa, what reactions would you like to add?
Well, I just want to thank Sky for that description of some of the really positive things we saw a few weeks ago on Election Day in terms of people really standing up, coming together to try to defend and demand their rights. I think it's really important also to, you know, remind people that nearly 73 million Americans did not vote for this extreme agenda. And in fact, I think we're going to see a reckoning as people who did vote for Trump after he lied in his claims that he had really nothing to do with Project 2025, as they see this project being unfurled on them, I think there's going to be some buyer's remorse. I'm not sure how much, but I think there will be, because as Sky mentioned, as you noted, Rose, the Trump campaign really did a lot to try to distance itself from Project 2025, even getting a fact check on CNN claiming that it was false to assert that he was part of Project 2025, even though he gave a speech at the Heritage Foundation talking about how Kevin Roberts and the Heritage Foundation were going to basically be filling in the details for his administration, even though his vice presidential pick wrote the foreword for Kevin Roberts' book, basically creating a novel about how they're going to implement Project 2025. And as you pointed out at the start of the show, how Trump is choosing people who wrote key chapters of Project 2025 to put them into positions of significant power in the new administration. And their agenda is reckless and extreme. We have a website that we've prepared with some of our allies. When I say we, I say True North Research and Court Accountability. That website is project2025admin.com. And on that site, we have profiles of a number of these individuals who were part of Project 2025 and who are now being named as potential appointees in a new Trump cabinet. And so project2025admin.com really details both the plans as well as the people. The personnel is policy part of this, the people that Trump is tapping to implement what is plainly the Project 2025 agenda that he tried to run away from because it is so unpopular with the American people. These are ideas that the American people do not endorse across the board, and they are radical, reactionary, and actually highly destabilizing for our economy and for our society.
Lisa, I'd like to ask you what your thoughts are about media coverage overall of Project 2025. There were a few months when we constantly heard about Project 2025. The media across the board, I thought, did a pretty good job of explaining what was in it. They didn't dig as deep as Sky and her team at Democracy Forward. We heard a lot about getting rid of the Department of Education. Obviously, that's so important. But overall, they did a good job. And then it really tapered off. So you had Donald Trump lying saying that he has no connections to Project 2025. And Kamala Harris was doing an interview with CBS anchor Nora O'Donnell, and it was a pretty heated interview. And I just watched it again. Nora O'Donnell was talking about abortion, and she said, when you argue that Donald Trump, if elected, would put forward a national abortion ban, Harris said, just read Project 2025. O'Donnell said, the former president said that's not true. He would veto it. So that's a whole other issue, of course, the six-week abortion ban. But she was really kind of going after Harris. You know, he's distanced himself from all of this. And any time Harris would talk about Project 2025, I would hear a host come in and say, oh, but Trump has distanced himself from that. What are your thoughts, Lisa, about how the media coverage really changed over time on Project 2025?
I thought the corporate media, as you pointed out, for a while was actually covering Project 2025, and then they took Trump's denial basically at face value and aggressively asserted it on his behalf. I don't know why they would choose that lie among all his lies to believe, but it was stunning to see that kind of pushback, like you mentioned in the Nora O'Donnell interview, when plainly Donald Trump was surrounding himself with people who helped write Project 2025, and there was photo evidence, video evidence, and more of those close ties. And so I really feel like the corporate media in that respect did a terrible disservice to the American people by accepting Trump's denial. Now we've seen this surge in coverage on Project 2025 because obviously he was always going to implement it in various ways. This question on abortion, I think, is also particularly misleading because when you look at, or the way it's been described in that CBS interview, for example, you know, when you look at that Project 2025 agenda, it's quite clear that the incoming personnel for Trump are devoted to rolling back abortion rights. And Trump, you know, made a number of conflicting statements on the campaign trail about abortion because he was afraid of the results of being held accountable for his central role, along with Leonard Leo, in packing the Supreme Court to get Roe versus Wade reversed. We know that that Project 2025 plan, which he, you know, is intimately involved with in terms of the key people, definitely is targeting abortion, definitely is planning to target states that allow surgical abortion, and is attempting to get the FDA to rescind the approval for mifepristone, the main drug that is used for abortion. In fact, most abortions in the U.S. are through a medication, abortion. And so, you know, I don't know why the corporate media would seize on Trump's claims about Project 2025 when all evidence is in the other direction. But also the other disservice they did, I think, is not honestly talking with the American people about the effect of Trump's trade policies, for example. This notion that the trade policy would not cause massive inflation. It's clear that the sort of tariffs that Trump has proposed would cause massive inflation, but it was very hard to get coverage in the mainstream press, including the corporate press, about the true effect of Trump's reckless policies that are reflected in Project 2025. So I guess I would say, in sum, I am deeply critical of the coverage in the recent weeks, in particular, the acceptance of Trump's distancing of Project 2025. And now we're seeing what a bald-faced lie that really was.
Skye, what would you add about media coverage?
Well, I agree. I just want to echo sort of everything that Lisa said. And I think we need to understand and keep this in mind moving forward. And hopefully the media will do some soul searching. I'm not sure that it will, but it did become, and we saw this too, people would reach out to us to talk about Project 2025, and we would see mainstream media really taking seriously this claim that Trump was not, was not at all connected to it when the connections were quite clear, just even given the over 100 people who served in his former administration, and of course who they're recycling back through now, who were part of it. So I would just echo those comments that Lisa made, as well as the need as we move forward to continue to really, you know, be vigilant about the information and the information ecosystem. And then, of course, we saw just separately the you know, the Trump campaign rely on so much mis and disinformation, which I think is a is an entirely separate subject, but to some degree connected to this as well.
Today we're talking about Project 2025. We are going to continue this weekly series. We're joined by Sky Perryman, President and CEO of Democracy Forward. Lisa Graves is Managing Director of Court Accountability and Director of True North Research. They both have done extensive research on Project 2025. What questions do you have? What concerns you the most? How do you think organizations should respond? You can email yourcall@kalw.org. And we're still getting our phone lines fixed, but you can call in. It's a different phone number for now. It's 415-841-4128. 415-841-4128. So given that you both have done very deep dives into Project 2025, at this point, knowing what we know about some of these picks, Sky, what concerns you the most?
Well, you look, I mean, we know that Project 2025 is an effort to take away from the American people so much security and stability and many rights that they continue to enjoy. And of course, we're seeing the Trump Vance, the incoming administration and the transition team, take no time to start accelerating their plans. What we have done at Democracy Forward and Lisa and others have been engaged in this. It's a broad sort of collaborative effort is to really look at these priority threats where Project 2025 is really at risk of being quite accelerated quickly, and to ensure that civil society and, you know, the American people are really able to respond to that. A few things that I'll highlight that you and I discussed, the last one was on the show, but as Project 2025 has never been this thing that was sort of sitting out there on a shelf that was at risk of being implemented. It is actually a far-right agenda that has been being pursued in so many ways in the states, in states with far-right leadership, and obviously also in courts where far-right litigation, far-right legal groups have really been aiming to undermine a number of people-centered policies that have been the result of the democratic process. So as some examples, and I'll get to sort of where we see this quite accelerating now, a number of the proposals in Project 2025, things like seeking to make millions of Americans that have been made eligible for overtime through a Biden administration Department of Labor regulation not eligible for that overtime, raising the federal contractor minimum wage, right? Many of the policies that have gone into effect, particularly economic policies, over the last 4 years are things that far-right state attorneys general and far-right legal organizations are already challenging in the courts, and the Department of Justice has been defending those policies so that the American people can benefit from things like access to mifepristone and FDA's authority and good worker-centered economic policies and policies that can really help people's pocketbooks. And so one of the first things that we expect to see, of course, is that the Department of Justice under the leadership of the Trump administration, may seek to stop defending and will likely stop defending those policies and really aligning themselves with this far-right agenda that's been undermining them. And then, of course, we imagine seeing a range of day one actions that the administration will take and that you're already seeing with some of the appointments that are made, and the resource that Lisa references is just such a good one to study up on those, the Project 2025 admin that she and her colleagues have established. But we also know that there'll be a range of day one actions, everything from possibly seeking to undermine the civil service, to engaging in mass deportations, to undermining civil rights and weaponizing the government against the people, that they will seek to, that they will seek to implement those in those early days. They've been very clear about that. And so really the work ahead is the work to respond and to use all of the tools that our democracy provides, including legal action, which is what we're doing at Democracy Forward and what the Democracy 2025 project is all about, to ensure that these policies are met with swift legal opposition. Many of them are quite unlawful.
Aaron Rupar does a very good job of grabbing clips from various cable shows. And this morning, he posted clips of Stephen Miller, who said Trump's mass deportation will begin the second he's sworn in, and then incoming Trump border czar Tom Homan is threatening people in blue states with prosecution if they hide migrants from ICE. Lisa, what concerns you the most?
Well, it's hard to pick one out of the many concerns, but it's certainly the case that Kevin Roberts, who's the leader of the Heritage Foundation, promised that the second Trump finishes the oath of office, he would be signing executive orders, even though, as we've discussed, Trump claimed he, you know, had no plans that were part of Project 2025. Then you see Stephen Miller basically reiterating that, this plan that he will be signing executive orders the second he is inaugurated. And those orders are quite extreme. They envision using a combination of the U.S. military, possibly National Guard, ICE officials from the Department of Homeland Security, and local police to do a massive massive campaign to remove people from the United States. And the terms of that removal are themselves also quite extreme because, as many people have heard, but I think haven't really processed, one of the things that the Trump team has been peddling is an outright lie that people who are born in the United States to immigrants who don't have papers, that they are not citizens. In fact, under the Constitution, under the 14th Amendment, since it was written more than 150 years ago, it says that if you're born in the United States, you're a citizen. But this deportation force that Trump is planning to unleash, they have said that they are going to remove people because they disagree, because the Trump administration is going to try to reinterpret the Constitution to not apply citizenship to people born here. What does that mean for people? That means that this administration intends to remove American citizens as well as immigrants from the United States, and to do so on an emergency basis, to assert that there's an emergency, this invasion language, and then use that to suspend the regular procedures for people trying to present evidence that they are citizens or that they are immigrants who do have a right to be here, and to do so in a way that I think is designed to cause fear and massive disruption. I'm so glad of the tremendous work of Sky and Democracy Forward and their Democracy 2025 efforts to help litigate against these extreme plans. These plans are extreme. People like Stephen Miller, who is being tapped to return to the administration to help spearhead this, along with Tom Homan, are people who will execute Trump's extreme agenda, which again overlaps like a Venn diagram that's almost with basically no gap with the Project 2025 agenda. And that agenda will not just pose tremendous hardship for immigrants who are targeted. As you point out, Rose, they also intend to try to attack the cities, people who are trying to help provide refuge for people who are maybe fleeing this wide net of sweeps. They also have said that they would go after prosecutors if they don't prosecute people under the Trump administration's view of immigration. And they've also said that they would try to deny funds to states that resist this extreme draconian plan that they've basically signaled quite clearly. And not just that, this massive type of raid would also cause, I think, a lot of terror in the lives of ordinary people, disrupt our workplaces, disrupt our economy, and do so in a way that's just designed, I think, to cause maximum harm. This notion that there are millions and millions of violent immigrants is simply false. And in fact, what you see here is the way this election in some ways was propagandized by Fox and by other right-wing outlets to push on this notion of crime, when in fact crime rates are down. And in fact, we do not have, I think, any sort of, quote, invasion in the United States that would warrant the type of a claim of military power to come into our cities that Trump has forecasted, and that his Project 2025 henchmen have said that they are going to engage in. So there are a lot of things that I'm concerned about. I'm concerned about the fact that Trump wants to put someone under investigation or who was under investigation for sexual relations with a minor, with a 17-year-old girl in charge of the Justice Department in the form of Matt Gaetz. I'm concerned about other people that he has said he wants to put in charge of key agencies because of their manifest unfitness for positions of public trust, and their, you know, the things that they said about their willingness to engage in extreme policies at Trump's request. But I am very, very concerned about this assertion of emergency power by the president, especially because John Roberts, the Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court, has basically given Trump license to engage in activities that would otherwise have been illegal prior to this July of 2024, when John Roberts and the Republican majority on the Supreme Court gave Trump immunity for so-called official acts, meaning that if Trump calls one of these acts, quote, an official act, then he himself is purportedly immune from criminal prosecution. And that poses significant risks, I think, to soldiers and others who would report to him about the fact that they have a duty to defy an illegal order, even if Trump himself would not be engaged, could not be charged with that crime. And so we are at a crisis point in America because of the lie machine that Fox News has really put into place. I shouldn't call it news, but Fox has put into place in propagandizing a substantial portion of the American population with the assistance of a U.S. Supreme Court that is not acting like a court, but is acting like an arm of the Republican Party, determined to put its thumb on the scale in favor of Donald Trump. We don't know what's going to happen in that litigation ultimately when it gets to the Supreme Court. We have to pursue that litigation because it's the right thing to do to defend people's rights, to defend our democracy. And we also have a Supreme Court that I think is untrustworthy itself based on its actions in this most recent Supreme Court term on immunity and in other cases where it has basically disregarded the plain language of the law and overturned numerous important precedents.
We're going to take a quick break. Lisa Graves is Managing Director of Court Accountability and Director of True North Research, an investigative watchdog. Sky Perryman is President and CEO of Democracy Forward, a national legal organization that advances democracy and social progress. Sky and her team put together the People's Guide to Project 2025. We had her on twice to go over that because it is so lengthy and in-depth. Democracy Forward is now spearheading an initiative called Democracy 2025. We will learn more about the legal challenges and responses that we can expect in the months to come. Find more information, democracy2025.org. This is Your Call. We decided to continue our series on Project 2025 after Trump's victory. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Because of Donald Trump's victory, we have decided to continue our series on Project 2025. If you have any comments or questions about what we can expect, how groups are planning to respond, you can email yourcall@kalw.org. Sky Perryman is President and CEO of Democracy Forward. Lisa Graves is Managing Director of Court Accountability and Director of True North Research. We've got a couple of emails. Don writes, do you think that the states will raise taxes to fund programs refunded by the feds? What are your thoughts on that, Lisa?
All right, I was on mute, but you know, I don't know that that's necessarily the direction that the states are going to go in terms of their resistance. I know you can see from press reports that there are a number of governors who are examining how to protect the rights of their residents, the rights of the American citizens within their borders from this policy. I have very serious concerns about how Trump does not act as a president for all the people in the United States and has threatened previously not to provide FEMA aid to states governed by governors that he disagrees with, people from the Democratic Party. That's wrong morally. I think it's wrong legally. But we are now facing the potential for a president who will not actually provide federal aid for emergencies, for example, on a partisan basis. And so I think states are going to have to come up with creative ways to make sure that people get the emergency services they need, and that a president who would engage in such partisanship and heartless disregard for the effect of natural disasters on people, that there are consequences for him and for those in his administration that would engage in that type of callous behavior. I think what we're going to see also is along those lines, a lot of thinking about states in a lot of areas about how to protect the prerogative of states to protect these interests, including reproductive rights access, access to abortion and birth control. We know that birth control is also something that's been targeted by Project 2025. At one point, Project 2025 even insists that it's going to remove the word condoms from women's preventative health pamphlets, because women don't use condoms, even though anyone who has any common sense knows that condoms are used to prevent the transmission of sexual diseases as well as pregnancy, even though they're not actually used directly by a woman. That's just the sort of extremism that Project 2025 represents, and the states are going to have to contend with that. And it's also the case that we have in Project 2025 other ways in which it would make it more difficult for people to engage in IVF in order to have the children that they want. And it also reflects a substantial, dramatic reversal in respect for the rights of LGBTQ Americans. And so our states, California and other states, where you have a Democratic governor, and by our states, I mean the states that are trying to resist this extremism, are going to have their work cut out for them in resisting these types of extreme policies that Project 2025 represents. And I'll just say on this question of, you know, how possible is it, as Sky pointed out, some of these programs are already in place in some of the red states, or some of these limitations are in place, these Project 2025 limitations are in place. But we know, for example, in 2018, that the predecessor Project 2025, which was in essence Project 2017, the Heritage Foundation said that 2/3 of its agenda was implemented by the end of the first year of the Trump administration. And so no one should be downplaying, I think, the risks that this project poses, because Trump already implemented a prior version of this that was less extreme, but a prior version of it. And as you pointed out at the outset, Rose, we have his commitment in these nominations to basically move this Project 2025 agenda forward through people like Stephen Miller and Tom Homan and Brendan Carr.
What are your thoughts on this, Sky? Because people are very concerned about proposed cuts to programs like food stamps and Medicaid. What are your thoughts about how states that support those programs will respond?
I mean, I'll say a few things. I mean, one, they should be concerned, because in the prior administration, the administration abruptly cut funding for a wide range of programs, including bipartisan supported longstanding programs. We had to sue to restore funds in places like Baltimore, Maryland, and King County, Seattle, and communities across the country on just a bipartisan, longstanding teen pregnancy prevention program. So just there wasn't any limit to what they sought to do. But I think I can say a few things. I think the states will obviously, and you've seen attorneys general come out and say that they intend to defend the rights of the people in their state, particularly in states where you have Democratic attorneys general. So that's incredibly important. But the other thing is, we need to remember what happened in the last administration. Last administration, the President Trump came in and wanted to repeal the Affordable Care Act. I mean, he wanted to cut off so many benefits and access to people, and there was ultimately fissures in Congress that stopped that repeal. He sought to sabotage elements of the ACA and other important public benefit programs and public programs, and litigation. Legal action was able to stop that, because many of the ways in which they went about doing these harmful things were unlawful, and we haven't seen any evidence that this administration has sort of changed its tune in terms of how it's going to operate. And so I do think it's just to focus on there will be tools that states have, and there will be tools that the American people have, and it's going to be important in this time that we use those tools, and including making it clear to members of Congress, even those that are aligned with the party of the incoming president, the importance of certain of these programs that we know are deeply popular and deeply benefit many communities, including communities that are more aligned with Republican lawmakers. So I think that, I just would really focus on like the work ahead is the work to ensure to really hold our elected leaders to account, and then of course to use the courts and other tools that we have to slow harmful and unlawful activity.
Skye, can you help us understand how this will play out? What will they be able to do, and what won't they be able to do? When you think about the Senate, Trump is going to walk into the White House with the House and the Senate. But if four Republican senators decide not to vote for a bill, then it will die. So that's four. People are talking about Lisa Murkowski, Susan Collins, the senator who's replacing Mitt Romney, possibly. So there's that. And then you've got the House. So and then you have executive orders. Because a lot of people are saying, can they really do this? Can they get rid of the Department of Education? Can they completely eliminate Head Start? So can you explain how that'll work given the makeup of the Senate and the House?
Well, right. So for things that require an act of Congress to repeal major laws, to take down major elements of the federal government that were created through legislative action, the president is going to have accomplices in what he seeks to do. And that's where the American people and their voice really comes in, because a range of the proposals that they are, a range of the proposals that are in Project 2025 that the incoming administration and their far-right allied organizations want to pursue are things that, as Lisa noted, are deeply unpopular with the American people. They're also harmful. And many of these proposals would be very harmful to places like where I grew up, right? In Waco, Texas, right? Places that are in more red areas that benefit from a lot of the programs. And so there's going to be a real role for people and communities throughout this country to make it clear to their elected leaders, including in the U.S. Senate, what is acceptable and what is not from their perspective. So that is just one thing. I think that he could have a real uphill battle on some of these areas, because he will have to have, like I said, accomplices in the Senate. And I think that there are some senators that could be quite vulnerable in their reelection campaigns if they sell out the interest of people in their states that they're trusted to represent. So that's sort of on the Senate piece, and the legislative piece. But there are a range of ways that the former Trump administration sought to undermine important benefits and laws in the federal agencies, right? In the agencies that they control the leadership of. But many of those actions that they took, so this is actions they may take through executive order, they could take through regulations, interim regulations, trying to roll back certain regulations, conduct that's happening in those federal agencies, many of those things were unlawful. And in the last administration, the Trump administration lost roughly around 80% of the time in court. And so that is why it's going to be very important to ensure that people and communities are not only making their voices heard in our legislative chambers and in the public square, but also in and through the courts. And so that's really what we are seeking to do through our collaborative Democracy 2025 effort. And your listeners that want to see what that is about and get involved can go to democracy2025.org and sign up and get updates and really track a lot of that activity. I'm not making light of it. I think it's going to be very hard to protect people and communities in this time. And I think that he will engage in a range of activities that will be quite harmful. But we are not without power, and we are not without the ability to push back. And I think the Senate is going to be very important, and you know, even the House, people holding their members accountable, and then of course the courts.
What would you add, Lisa? And then if you can also talk about more about what people can do. What power do people actually have at this point? And we're talking about the federal level, and then we'll talk about state and local.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with everything Skye said and the importance of that litigation effort of Democracy 2025 and people really using their voices, because if this new administration, you know, tries to change Medicaid in the ways that Project 2025 is planning, or Medicare, or roll back or repeal the prescription drug arrangements that have really saved people so much money for medicine that they need under Medicare, or if they, you know, if they move forward with that demand to, you know, slash or kill Head Start or nutrition assistance, school lunches, and more. You know, I think what we have to have is a series of conversations with our friends, our family, our coworkers about standing up to this, speaking out about it, calling our members of Congress, regardless of their party, to demand that they not go along with these extreme plans. You know, when such plans are announced, that people sort of just renew your efforts to have your voices be heard through those calls to Congress. I know it can sound frustrating. Personally, I would urge you to call the district office, meaning the phone number in your community for that representative, and not just call the Washington hotline where they're tallying, but really make sure that at that district office, whenever those members appear in their, you know, in the towns that they represent or where their staff are, to make sure that they are seeing visibly and vocally that people do not support this extreme agenda. We just have got to use people power and not lose hope, not give in to despair. Despair is the ally of extremism or of authoritarianism. And so, you know, part of how we do that, I think, is by, you know, really supporting one another, supporting each other, making sure that people, you know, who may be facing potential cuts through these programs are supported either by our states or local efforts or other volunteer efforts. But the really key thing, in my view, is to not give up, not give in. This is a moment in many ways. It's a sort of terrible foreboding moment, but it is not forever. There are actions and reactions, and people's voices in America over time have been heard. That's why we have made so much progress on things like prescription drug relief, so much progress on making sure that kids, poor kids, have access to school lunch. You know, so much progress on things that matter to our freedom, like the ability to marry the person we love and the ability to have access to abortion care, contraceptives, and other medical treatments. And I think the American people are not going to go silently into a future that really is the manifestation of a very small number, in many ways, of right-wing elites, right-wing extremists who have a very narrow vision of Americans' freedom and a very narrow vision of the role of the federal government in helping make our lives better. I think most people, as we sort of began the conversation, I know from the polling that most people do not support these policies. And once they start seeing them being pushed forward, being moved forward by Trump and his Project 2025 appointees, I think people will react and will say no. And then we'll have to battle it out. We'll have to battle it out in the courts. It may have to be battled out in the 2026 midterm elections and beyond. But this is just a moment. And there are other moments to come. If people do not give in, do not lose hope, and do not give in to that sort of despair that authoritarians want people to feel like it's overwhelming and that there's no way around them. There are, and together, you know, we can prevail. We may not prevail. We will not prevail in every battle instantly, but this is a moral battle for the future of America, for our soul, for our families, for future generations, and we just simply cannot give in. As my hero Frederick Douglass wrote, power concedes nothing without demand. It never has, and it never will, and we have to keep demanding. Which is, again, one of the reasons why I'm so honored to be on this show with you, Rose, for the hope that you provide, and on the show with you, Skye, for your tremendous efforts to provide that hope and activities to help move us forward.
Well, I really appreciate the work that you do. I know a lot of people are very concerned about so many things right now. We're getting emails from listeners who are very concerned about their Medicare. That has come up a few times on the show. Dr. Mehmet Oz, the former daytime TV star, has been tapped to lead the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. And The Lever is out with a piece called Trump Picks Oz, Champion of Medicare Privatization. He has been paid to push Medicare privatization while investing in healthcare giants. And Mehmet Oz does not require Senate confirmation. RFK Jr. does, but Mehmet Oz does not. So, you know, I just wonder, this is something I've been thinking a lot about, because I want to acknowledge that this is sometimes a tough show to listen to because we go pretty deep into these issues, but we don't want to just, you know, fearmonger. I mean, there's a lot of, I appreciated what you said, Sky, about how you don't want to give your assessment of what really happened until you find more data about the election. We don't really know. We know what they've said. We know it's in Project 2025, but it's also very important to say, what can they legally do given the makeup of the Senate and the House? So, Sky, how do you think we should talk about what's to come without fear-mongering? Because people on Social Security and Medicare, they cannot lose that. I mean, people are really struggling to make ends meet right now. So we don't want to fearmonger here. How do you think we should really talk about these issues and what's to come?
Well, I mean, I think there's a few pieces here. I mean, one is it's important that we continue to ground ourselves in the facts and in, available information. And that's what, you know, you just echoing what Lisa said about, you know, your show, and this is why I love doing the show, but you and others that provide real information, right? And so we need to make sure that people are grounding themselves in what has happened now. You know, no policies have been changed right now other than through litigation where these far-right extremists are seeking to undermine many of the sort of pro-economy, pro, you know, kitchen table policies of the Biden administration. And that will be important as we move forward to make sure that the confusion doesn't inhibit people's ability to access or get services when they're available. It's also important, and I've said it a lot on shows, and I've said it to you, that we take extremists at their word. We wanted that was the case that many of us were trying to make over the last year. And some of the things that the incoming administration has said and pledged that they will do are deeply harmful to the American people. And there's no way, that's not fear-mongering. That is what has been said and what we have to sort of take them at their word. What we don't have to do is allow them to write this next chapter, because we do in this country have a lot of levers of power. And this goes back to Lisa's point about who voted and who did not, and about the opening points I made around what we know about what people champion in this country. And on the issues and all of these kitchen table issues that the incoming administration are really threatening to compromise they're those extreme policies that would compromise things like Medicare access or healthcare access or overtime pay. They're deeply unpopular with people. And so I just think that it's important. This is a heavy show because you do get in to these details, and that's important for us to understand what we're up against. But it's also important for us to understand the power that we all have as people in this time. And so, we'll continue to come back on as you want and can provide that good information, the information that that will be available on democracy2025.org or on other sites is factual information. And we're going to, it's going to take that to sort of help people and communities navigate through. And then also to help us access all the tools that we have in this country to ensure that they don't write the last chapter. In the prior administration, they actually were not able to overturn the ACA, and they were actually prevented from doing a number of harmful things that would have harmed people's healthcare access, their economic prosperity because of the tools that we know how to use in the courts and otherwise. And so just thank you for providing a platform where we can provide that information and where listeners and people can really understand and get accurate information in this web of confusion.
To your point, Skye, we mentioned this when you were on the show, but so many of our Project 2025 guests said, the problem is a lot of people in this country, when they hear about some of these policies, like getting rid of Head Start or the Department of Education, say, they can't do that, can they? Oh, that's just talk. And Sandy just wrote in and said, Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez took an important survey of her voters, trying to understand why many would vote for her and for Trump. And their response was, he wouldn't do what he threatens, does he? It's just talk. And I heard a lot of interviews with Trump voters on the cable shows over the past few weeks, and a lot of them said the same thing. Oh, we know people who like to say things just to get attention. He's not going to act on that.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I've heard, too. I've heard those sorts of claims from people I know, family members who voted for Trump. And I think that they're about to see how wrong they were. That's a situation that's going to cause a lot of hurt, although not things that we cannot try to contend with. And in fact, I think what this situation means is that we have a renewed opportunity to expand the number of people who support these more progressive policies. I remember from the Tea Party days a decade or so ago, where people were carrying signs, hands off my Social Security, hands off my Medicare. Well, we're right back. We're going to be right back there. And I think that, you know, I suppose it's the lemonade or the silver lining in this is that the aggression that the Trump appointees are likely to pursue will give us new opportunities to have conversations about why none of this is actually in the interest of most Americans and why we together have to stand against it. Mm-hmm.
Lisa Graves is Managing Director of Court Accountability and Director of True North Research, an investigative watchdog. You can learn more about their work, truenorthresearch.org. Skye Perryman is President and CEO of Democracy Forward. They put together the People's Guide to Project 2025. They're also spearheading an initiative called Democracy 2025 to ensure swift legal challenges and responses to harmful and anti-democratic actions expected in the first days of the Trump-Vance administration. Find more information at democracy2025.org. Lisa and Skye, thank you so much for your work and thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you, Rose. Thank you, Skye. Thank you, listeners.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. And thanks to Savannah Harriman-Pote for producing today's show. Thanks to Kevin Vance for engineering our show. And we'd love to hear how you'd like us to cover Project 2025 in the weeks and months to come. You can email yourcall@kalw.org. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.